All right, we're going to read today in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, and we're going to read verses 18 through verse 29. And Paul says a lot of things in here that I won't be able to cover today, but I realize that sometimes people struggle with self-worth, okay? And a lot of people do. I don't think that's ever bothered me, you know. I want people to like me, but if you don't, so what? You know? I'm just me, and I'm just going to be me. But some people struggle with maybe even fitting in society and a lot of things. And that concern really seems to grow during what we call the holiday season, because sometimes people don't have family or family's not close, you know. And they struggle with those issues. But we ought not to if we are Christians. We're going to address that today a little bit, okay? So follow along as we read here in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 18. Paul said, "For the preaching of the cross is to them that perish foolishness. But unto us which are saved, it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and will bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent. Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this world? Hath not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? For after that in the wisdom of God, the world by wisdom knew not God, it pleased God by the foolishness of preaching to save them that believe. For the Jews require a sign, and the Greeks seek after wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified, unto the Jews a stumbling block, and unto the Greeks foolishness. But unto them which are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God, and the wisdom of God. Because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. For you see your calling, brethren, how that not many wise men after the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. But God hath chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise, and God hath chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty, and base things of the world, and things which are despised hath God chosen. Yea, and things which are not, to bring to naught things that are, that no flesh should glory in his presence." So, we're going to talk about the called today. That's what Paul's talking about in the last part of what we read, isn't it? The called. And everybody is called of God. All of us. Paul wrote it later on to Titus, and he said, "For the grace of God that brings salvation has appeared to all men, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lust, we should live soberly and righteously and godly in this present world." So somehow, and I'm not sure how, I've never been able to think that through. I've studied it, I've contemplated on it, but somehow God appears to everybody. And what Paul is saying here to the church at Corinth is that a lot of people that we would consider to be important people, notice he calls them right there, the wise, the strong, they reject God because they are so into themselves and so into their lives that they disregard God. And God kind of works like this. If they reject him, he'll just go to somebody else. Right? That's a great thing. So we're all called in one form or another, right? But the very first calling that we have is out of darkness into the light of his salvation. That's the first calling that we have. It's not God's will, Peter said, that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. So God puts out a call to every man, doesn't he? To come. And though it's not written quite like this in here, I think it's kind of insinuated that those of us who have answered that call, we realize how unworthy we are to be called children of God. Because we do understand, don't we, today, that it's by grace. It's nothing we did. It's nothing we can do. It's not money that we've got. It's not our heritage or our education or our status in life that allows us to be called children of God, but it's because God loved us enough that he sent his son to die for us, and he calls us out of that sinful life. And so God does that for us. He qualifies the unqualified. He qualifies the called. You say, I don't have anything to offer to God. Just wait. You'll find out. You got a lot to offer God. You got a lot to offer God. He takes us, and even though we're unworthy, and even though we don't have what we would consider any talents or anything that God could use, guess what? He does. He can use them. God majors in using ordinary things. That's what Paul said, didn't he? He took the simple thing to confound the wise. He took the weak things to confound the strong. See, science today has still never quite figured out how the leaf cutter ant can cut a leaf and carry it away that weighs five times as much as he does. That's pretty remarkable. That's a weak thing that you could squish between your fingers and yet has the power to carry five times his own weight. That's tremendous. If you could carry that, some of us be carrying a load, wouldn't we? Confounds us because we can't figure it out. And God takes people oftentimes that we would almost just push aside and think, well, they're too simple-minded. God can't use them. But he does, doesn't he? So those people are the called. I ran across this quote from Martin Luther King Jr., and I'm going to read it to you today, and I think it's kind of cool because it kind of reminds me of what I have always told my children. And I'm proud of my daughters. I am. I'm very proud of them. But I've always told them, I don't care what vocation you have in life. Now, I don't care. You know, everybody wants their kids to be a doctor or a lawyer or something like that, you know, or CEO of some big corporation or something. And all that's fine, okay? But I've always told my children, I don't care what you are, just be the best you can at it. And I know I've got three daughters, you know. I told my son, and he could have wound up doing this, but he didn't. I said, if you're a ditch digger, be the best one you can be. And here's what Martin Luther King Jr. said one time. If a man is called to be a street sweeper, he should sweep streets even as Michelangelo painted, or Beethoven composed music, or Shakespeare wrote poetry. He should sweep streets so well that all the host of heaven and earth will pause to say, here lived a great street sweeper who did his job well. Now, sometimes we kind of look down on those people that have kind of a, what we think, a lesser job, right? We've got a fellow that does the janitorial work the first 4 days of the week. He's there 10 hours, and I know him most of his life. And I encourage him once in a while. I said, you're doing a good job. Now, I have a hard time telling people they're doing a good job if they're not, okay? But he really strives to do the best that he possibly can do. And I said to him one day, if you ever think you're underappreciated, just don't come in a couple of days. Just don't show up. He said, why? I said, they'll find out how important your job is. Yeah, it ain't been that many years ago. Maybe it was in the 80s. I don't know. Time just flies, doesn't it? When the sanitation workers in New York said, we're not going to pick up your garbage. And within a week, you couldn't walk down the sidewalks of New York. It was laying in the streets. They went on strike, and it didn't take them long to solve that strike. Why? Them people's important. They do an important job, don't they? And yet we seem to look at our lives and we think, you know what? I just don't have anything to offer. I'm just insignificant, you know, in this world. Well, are we really? Are we really? No, we're not. We're actually bigger than we think we are. J. Vernon McGee said one time that great doors are swung on small hinges. Now, that doesn't mean anything to you unless you got a door that won't close at home. And then you go, well, what's wrong with it? It's probably not the door. What is it? It's probably the hinge. It could be a screw in that hinge. I've even seen hinge pins wear out that you guys don't even know what a hinge pin is. Some of you don't. But I can tell you this, when it gets wore out, your door ain't going to swing right. If there's a screw loose, your door ain't going to swing right. We're learning more and more that our automobiles are so complex, one little sensor can go bad, and the check engine light will come on and we'll freaking pull over. Right? And it might be as simple as you didn't tighten the gas cap. You say, oh, really? That causes that? Yep, sure does. I ain't got time to explain all that, okay? But things we don't even think about, God can use. People that others don't even think about, God can use. Paul said he's called them. They're the called. They're the ones that really play a vital, important part of society. What did we call all of the medical workers back in 2020? Heroes. We don't think much about them most of the time, do we? These people work through the worst pandemic that any of us have ever seen and likely ever will see. The grocery workers kept going, didn't they? The farmers kept growing crops. All those people that are overlooked by society all of a sudden became very important. Truck drivers, my goodness, how did we miss the importance of a truck driver? All those things that were backed up because ships couldn't come in and unload. We thought, oh, them people, they're just laborers. They don't amount to nothing. They were important, weren't they? Guess what? We're important in the kingdom of God, too. If we have answered that call out of the darkness of sin into the light of His salvation, then God has a special part for us to play in His kingdom. And it will not be a small part. But it will be one if we do it with all of our might, with all of our passion, that it will be one that will be a great reward for us. And some of you still sitting back there going, I ain't got nothing God can use. I want to run you through some characters in the Bible that you've heard about and see if you can figure out who they are as we go through them. First one I'm going to talk about is somebody that was born a slave, born into slavery. And without any say-so whatsoever, that baby was elevated to royalty. Didn't have a say-so in it at all, but was taken to the palace of the ruler of the greatest empire on the face of the earth at the time and became royalty because he was adopted into the family. He didn't choose that. He was a baby. But he was elevated instantly. As he grew older, he killed somebody. He became a murderer. So what does he do? He runs for his life. He becomes a fugitive. And he hides in a barren country. He finally gets married and becomes a shepherd. Well, that's a roller coaster ride, ain't it? And in our society today, we say, well, how can God use somebody like that? He killed somebody. Well, now, can I just be straight with you today? You've probably never actually taken anybody's life, but you've killed them with your mouth a lot of times. just as guilty of killing somebody when you talk bad about them, pass rumors and things, okay? So don't think you ain't killed nobody. You probably have. All of us probably have, haven't we? So we're just as guilty. But could God use somebody like that? Could God use a guy that started out as a slave and went to royalty and then killed somebody, now he's a fugitive, and now he's taking care of his father-in-law's sheep? Can God use a guy like that? Sure he can. His name was Moses. He elevated him to being now, in the last part of his life, to being the deliverer of God's chosen people out of Egypt. That's pretty fantastic, isn't it? That God could do something like that. And then we have another character in the Bible. These are well-known people that you guys read about, and we don't think about what they were and what they became. Okay? This one started out as the youngest boy in the family, number seven. Here he is, just a kid. What's his job in the family? Well, the worst job that anybody could have, but he's the baby, so it's okay, he'll do it. We'll just put him out there with them sheep, let him take care of them. So that's what he does. He's out there taking care of the sheep. Until one day, the prophet Samuel showed up at the house and said to this young man's father, Jesse, God sent me here to anoint a king, and it's one of your kids. Jesse brings Eliab, the oldest, and Samuel said, oh, surely this is him. Surely this is the one. Well, it wasn't him. And so the next one comes along, and he goes, well, surely this is it. And God said, would you quit looking on the outside? I don't look on the outside, I look on the heart. And God still does that. I'm going to tell you that God still does that so much that if you're so ugly, you are U-G-L-Y, he ain't looking at that. He's looking at your heart, right? And all these brothers passed in front, and God said, not him, not him, not him, not him. And then finally, Samuel looks at Jesse and said, is this all of them, or you got anybody else? Well, we got one more, but he's the rat, you know, the bunch. He's the kid. He's out there with the sheep. Samuel said, call him. And as soon as David walked in, God said, that's the man. From the least in the family, during the dirtiest job in the family, least thought of by the rest of the family, God immediately elevates a shepherd boy to a king. You talk about confounding people. I got a feeling, and I've thought about this because I'm the little brother, you know. I bet they spent the rest of their lives scratching their head and saying, how in the world did that happen? I mean, that don't make sense. Our little brother's now the king. You know, we're going to have to bow to him, and he's our leader. Ain't no way. Yeah, you better. You know why? Because he's chosen of God. If God can do that, that tells us something, shouldn't it? Okay, well, what about this one? Here's another one you guys all know. Here's another individual that was born free but was taken captive when his homeland is invaded by a foreign army. And he's taken captive to another country altogether. And so he's a slave. He's in captivity. But through the process of a few things where he was determined to keep himself pure from the rest of the world, and to keep himself where he could, if possible, be used by God, he is elevated to number two in the country, right below the king. King says, I'll just set you right up here with me, and you can be my number two guy. And it wasn't, hold on to your blue seats, it wasn't just for one king, but for three. Three kings. God elevated this young man from being a captive slave to being number two in command for King Nebuchadnezzar, for King Belshazzar. And when that kingdom was overrun in the days of Belshazzar, this boggles my mind, because what happens when a new corporation comes and buys the place that you work? Who's the first people to get fired? leadership. Management's gone. We're going to bring our own guys in. But this boggles my mind because this young man right here, he's still at number two. That's the first guy you get rid of. But he's number two. From a slave to number two. And again, at that time, that nation of Babylon is the most powerful nation in the world. And you're telling me God took a little insignificant teenage boy who is a slave and puts him at the top up here? Not once, not twice, but three times? Under two, I'll use our term today, administrations? Yep. His name's Daniel. God did that. Daniel didn't do it. David didn't do it. Moses didn't do it. God did it, didn't he? That's what God did. That ought to boggle your minds just a little bit. Probably don't, but it ought to. Now let's go to another one. Just in case you ladies feel like you're left out. Another captive. Same circumstance as Daniel. Only a little later, she's born in captivity. She's never known freedom. Never. But through the series of events, this young lady who is captive, she's a slave, is elevated to the office of queen. Number two. Number two in the kingdom. And she doesn't feel like she deserves it. She still is humble and hard, and she still feels like that she hasn't have anything that can be contributed. But through the process of time, her people, the Jewish people's lives are being threatened, and it's about to come to the point where they're going to be completely annihilated, and she has access to the king, and she's afraid to go, and her cousin keeps saying, "You got to go talk to him." "Oh, I can't do that. You remember what happened to the last king? He got rid of her, and that's how I got in this position. I can't do that." And what does her cousin tell her? Everybody remember what her cousin says? No, because some of you don't know who I'm talking about. Who knows if God has brought you here for such a time as this? Here's your one chance, girl. You might have started out as a slave. You might be the queen right now, but if you want to do what God wants you to do, this is your part right here. This is your calling right here. This is the one thing. Did you ever think that perhaps God's got you here for one thing? I've wondered that sometimes. Has he got me here for something? I don't know. And so she's like, "Well, okay, if that's what you think." And for the sake of everybody else, she goes in and she has a little talk with the king. And again, through the process of time, she saves her people. What's her name? Anybody know her name? Esther. Esther. I don't know if you guys know this or not. That's the only book of the Bible that never mentions God. But God's in it, isn't he? Because he took a little insignificant slave girl and put her in a position where she could stop the very first Holocaust that was pronounced upon the people. That's fantastic, isn't it? I mean, that boggles my mind that God can take somebody like that and put him in that position. But he did, didn't he? Let's talk about another young lady. It's in the Bible. And we're going to talk a lot about her this month. I guarantee you we will. A young teenage girl whose past is really basically unknown. We don't know a lot about her, do we? But out of nowhere, God shows up and has a little talk with her one day. And he said, "Lady, young girl, you're highly favored. Among all the people in the world that's ever been born, I've picked you for one thing. You're special. There's nobody going to be more special than what you're going to be. Because I handpicked you." And she's like, "But wait a minute, I'm a nobody here. I'm a nothing. Here I am, just a young girl here in my family. And I'm, you know," and you guys think I'm making all this up, but go read it over in the book of Luke, okay? God said, no, I've got a purpose for you. Here's what's going to happen to you. The Holy Ghost is going to come upon you and you're going to be with child. She goes, whoa, wait a minute. I ain't never been with a guy. Okay, I'm a virgin. Can't happen. Can it? You know, that fact is questioned a lot of times. But I like to tell people this. Do you believe God created us out of a piece of dirt? Yeah. You don't think he could have put a little dust in her womb and made it a baby? Ain't nothing for God. Right? Nothing for God. And I'm not going to elevate her too high, as the Catholic Church does, and call her the mother of God, because she's not the mother of God, but she is the mother of the Son of God. On the fleshly side. On Mary's side, okay? Because his Father is God Almighty himself. And so here again, God has taken somebody that really the world probably wanted to overlook and forget about, and she's insignificant in her family because we don't know anything about her, except that God came and said, you know what? I'm going to let my son come to the world through you. What did her cousin Elizabeth say when God spoke to Elizabeth? Why, you're highly blessed above all women that have ever lived. And here you are, little old Mary. Now, that's pretty fantastic to me. Ain't that fantastic to you, Melissa? I mean, it just blows me away. By the way, he picked Melissa to be a grandmother here last week, too. I think she's going to be a good one. Once she learns how to handle babies again, it's been so long, she's going to have to learn a little bit. She'll be all right. We talked about that earlier. It'll come natural. I think she'll be fine. God took those... What did Paul say? God took the simple things to confound the wise. He took the weak things to confound the mighty. God can just take things that the world looks at and just thinks it's trash that needs to be thrown away and can elevate it up to where it just boggles our mind that God's put him in that position, can't he? And he did it over and over. I just picked out a few of them here, okay? But there's also another group here, a group that I want to talk to you about, okay? There's this little ragtag group of men that were, as they're told later on, years later on, after they become part of what is really important, and I'm trying not to give this away until the punchline, but they were unlearned and ignorant. They never went to school. Never went to school. You say, well, what were they doing? They were grown up and they were working, but what did they do? What every young man did back in those days, he followed in the footsteps of his father. Whatever his fathers did, that's what he did. And in this little ragtag group of men, we found out that four of them didn't know how to do anything but fish. And I don't know if you ladies know this or not, but it don't take a lot to fish. That's a pastime for a lot of men. Now, we don't fish like they did, okay? But how hard can it be to get out there and throw a net over the side and pull them in? Don't take a smart guy to do that, does it? And we know four of them. That's all they did. That's all they'd ever done, right? And we know one of them couldn't have been too smart because he's working for the government. The IRS at that, okay? You guys know who I'm talking about? 12 men. Jesus handpicked 12 men that were misfits in society, that were looked down upon by the leadership of not only their country, but of their religion, because they were not educated like they thought they should be. And yet Jesus picks these 12 men to carry on one of the greatest responsibilities ever handed down to mankind from God Almighty himself. They were to be witnesses for 3 years of everything that Jesus ever did. And two of them wrote Gospels, Matthew and John. And Mark's Gospel is based upon another guy who was a fisherman named Peter, and he hand chose them. Peter tells us all about it over in his epistle. We were eyewitnesses. John said, we beheld him and we touched him with our hands. We ate with him. We worked with him. We slept with him. We did everything to get God handpicked us that when Christ returned back to the heavens, to the glory of God, we were left behind to be witnesses. And isn't it sweet in the prayer that Jesus made in the garden over there in John chapter 17, where he prays that God will keep them safe in the world they live in. You see, all we know is four of them were fishermen and the other one was a tax collector, and we have no clue about the rest of them. But they were just probably common, ordinary, everyday simpletons. And God has given them a task. Carry the message. Carry the message of everything you've seen and everything you've done. Be eyewitnesses of what I've done for mankind. And all of those men, save Judas, who took his own life, but Matthias, he was a nobody too. All of those men died believing the report that they delivered. And I'm here to tell you something. Nobody has ever died for something they didn't believe was true. They believed every word. Simple, ordinary, everyday people that were insignificant to the world, God took them and elevated them, and they carried the message of the gospel on the day of Pentecost, and the church was born. And you might think, that's not too important, but that's why we're here today, isn't it? Because of what Jesus did. And for the courage that these men had, that they went ahead in the face of a persecution and hardship and even their own deaths to the very end, they carried the message to the world, unashamed and unafraid. I'm here to tell you this. If God can do that to those people, He can do it to me. He can do it to me. And I know people look at the preacher and say, yeah, we know you went to seminary. You know what seminary I went to? Brookside Program Holiness Church at the corner of Brookside and Jefferson in Indianapolis. That's where I learned the word. I learned it in my home. And then when I finally wised up from my period of stupidity. People love it when I talk about how stupid I was. Don't laugh, you was just as dumb. Didn't we all do stuff? I think I've shared this with you, maybe last week, you know, when you go to your teenager and ask him why they did something, they go, I don't know. Don't keep asking them. You know why? Because they don't know. They've been bit by the stupid bug, and they're doing things they don't have any explanation for, and all you can do is pray for them and ask God to keep them safe and use them for something, right? God took me up. My favorite of all the Psalms, Psalm 40. He took me up out of a horrible pit, out of the miry clay. A guy that did not deserve to live. A guy that had rejected every call God had ever made on his life. A guy that thumbed his nose at all those religious people down there at the church that I've known all my life that tried to teach me and to help me walk the right way. I didn't deserve salvation. I didn't even deserve a glance from God. Did you? The answer is no. And I'd done some awful things. And you have too, haven't you? But God, through His mercy and His grace, has called you out of that, just like He called Moses, David, Daniel, and Esther, and Mary, and those 12 disciples. God called you, even though the world may have looked at you and said they are worthless. God still has a plan for your life. And you can look at me as I'm your pastor and say, oh, but look at all the work that you do. I had a lady tell me one time, one of the best revivals I ever preached. I think we went 5 or 6 weeks, can't remember how much, preached every night, and we had like 30 people get saved. Man, we had a great baptism. And she was leaving the church the last night, and she shook hands, and she said, you ought to be proud of yourself. I said, sis, what'd I do? She said, well, look at all those people you saved. I said, honey, I didn't save nobody. It's not my job to save them. It's my job to point them in the right direction and to tell each and every one of us that are here this morning and anybody that listens to this live or watches it later on, you are not worthless. You are valuable in the eyes of God. That precious soul that dwells within your body is more precious than all the wealth that there is in this world, because it cannot be duplicated. It cannot be replaced. And it will exist forever and ever. And the call that we get from God first is to come out of the darkness of sin. And I answered that call one night. Did you? And you may still be going around saying, well, I really don't know what I'm supposed to do. Hang on, Esther. Your time will come. Hang on. Your time will come. The greatest honor that any of us can have in the entire world, and I mean this with all my heart, the greatest honor, the greatest privilege that we can have is to share the gospel with somebody and help lead them to Jesus Christ. You've been an Esther. You've been a Moses. You helped deliver them. You've set a precedent. They're going to look up to you and say, oh, so-and-so preached the message when I got saved. I have young people tell me all the time, remember the time you preached in such and such a place? And I ain't got a clue. You know why? Because I'm just doing what I'm supposed to do. Well, I got saved. Had a young lady come to me one night at revival just a year or two ago at Walnut Hill Church. She said, I want to shake your hand. I said, why? She said, I want to shake the hand of the man that took the hand of my husband when he got saved. I remembered that one. I remembered baptizing him. But we're not here to show off, are we? No, we're here to carry the message just like the 12 and to be found faithful. And while the world may look at us, and I'm sure the church I grew up in looked at me a lot of times and said, God ain't never going to do enough of that boy. We have tried, okay? We have. I tell you, I grew up in a great youth group. There was a bunch of us all the time, 35 or 40 of us. It was a great time to grow up. But I'm telling you this, when it come to Christmas time and Easter time, most of the time, they didn't like me very well. Because I can memorize a song, I can memorize a cantata in just a couple of weeks, and I had it down pat, and I couldn't understand why they wasn't smart enough to do it. And so I'd be messing around and making fun and causing trouble, and they'd finally tell me to shut up or go home. But they knew I knew the part. And I know they all thought, there ain't no hope for this boy. But then when I finally answered the call, I said yes. There was hope for me all along, do you know that? And there's hope for you. And I don't know what God has in store for each and every one of us. I really don't. But something. I wasn't going to bring this up, but I just glanced over and saw Robbie Link. It ain't been long ago. The world wouldn't have given a dime for Robbie Link. Because he had cancer. And the world would have said no hope. I don't know about you guys, but I love that man's testimony. It blesses me every time I hear it. Some people in Edinburgh wouldn't give you a dime for Stan Brown because all he does is help bury people over there. I'm not tooting your guy's horn. Don't get the big head. But on Thursday night, that guy gathers with people that you wouldn't have anything to do with. He talks to them and he prays with them. And some of them come to Christ. He's using those two little pieces of dirt right over there. And he can use you if you'll let him. But he can't use you until you first answered the call to come to him. And then, possibilities are limitless. My goodness, how many people can you use? He can use you and me. Can you imagine that? He can use us. Insignificant. He can use us as a light to the world. As a friend to those who don't have a friend. As the hug to that child that can't get a hug at home. As the one that might be willing. You got a few extra dollars in your pocket. And listen, the church I grew up in never did just give money to people when they came in the church asking for it. What do you need? Well, my electric's cut off. Fine, we'll pay your electric bill. We're out of food. We don't have any food. That's how my parents got there at that church. Do you know that? Have I ever told you that story? It's shortly after I was born. Dad was a carpenter. It was a bad winter. They didn't have any money coming in, and they didn't know what they were going to do. And we had one of them little oil heaters you had in the house, you know, and you went and got your 5-gallon jug, and you filled it up, and it had gone about a week, and it was still burning. And Dad will tell you to this day, he can't figure out why there was still oil in that furnace. He has no clue. He said, we prayed, but we didn't know God was keeping the oil there and it was burning. And we were warm, but we didn't have a lot of food. But somebody from the Brookside Church found out about our family and they brought us enough food to last a month. And Dad and Mom talked about it and said, you know what? They don't even know us. But if they think that much of us, let's just go check them people out. And we were blessed because the church did a little something. They didn't just give us money. They said, we'll give you groceries. You got an extra dollar in your... You ever heard of talk about paying it forward? Anybody here ever paid it forward? There's some folks behind me, they're kind of a little rough. You look, I think I'll just pay their bill. I like to do that at the restaurant once in a while. Don't I, Helen? No, I didn't buy hers. I bought her granddaughter's. Cassie ain't got a lot of money. And I was eating and I thought, you know what? I got some extra money. I think I'll just pay for Cassie's. Every time I see that girl, she gives me a hug and says, thank you for buying my... See, random acts of kindness really do work. And God's actually called us to do those things. And who knows the light that you might be in that life. You're talking about me? Yeah, I'm talking about you. I'm talking about how that if you'll answer God's call, He will give you a calling that will make a difference in this world you live in. But you got to first of all answer His call. And so my question to you is this, as we come to the close of this message, and Brother Jimmy, you can get the song ready and get your piano player up there. Have you answered the call? And if you haven't, will you? Because you might be wanting to be used of God, and you might think, boy, I'd like to do great things for God, but I just don't think He can use me. Well, He can if you'll say yes. Because every one of us are the called. Did you know that? Now, I didn't want to preach. No, I've sung all my life. I started playing the guitar when I was 10 years old. Pick up the banjo a few years later and the mandolin a few years later and the bass even later. And I've played several different things. And I like to sing. And I'm thinking, that's what I'm going to do. God said, you ain't that good. I used to think I was. Then I got around real musicians, and I'm going, oops, you know, maybe God did put me where I belong. I don't know. But then I listened to some of the great orators, and I read the messages of some great pastors in years gone by, and I think, and God is using me, who sometimes can't hardly put two words together and who twists up Scripture, and I just make a mess sometimes, you know, or I feel like I do. But somehow God uses those. And He seems to use those in a greater way than when I think I've actually done something. You know why? Because God's in the middle of it. But I had to say yes for God to use me. And for God to use you, you got to humble yourself and realize that He cannot use you until you give yourself to Him totally. And when you do, man, it's untelling where He'll put you. He might make you a street sweeper. He might put you in a factory like Rick Popplewell, who can be a witness. He might put you in an office like Jessica Popplewell, or in a nursing facility like Melissa. Right? He might put you as a manager of a company like Jerry Lawler. You never know where God's going to use you. My goodness, He may even have you manicure in the golf course like Stan Curry. But in all of those, can we not serve God? It doesn't matter what your vocation is. Just be the best you can and let God shine through you. But that ain't going to happen until you give yourself to God. And so if you want to do great things for God, my call to you is this morning. Come and give yourself to Him. Answer His call, because He's calling you out of that life of sin and darkness into the light of salvation and into a life where you can work for Him and you can make an eternal difference in somebody else's life.